This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind the decisions we make every day and how to make better ones. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman. Join me as I share true stories from Nobel laureates, athletes, authors, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better decisions in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I think it's a reflex at this point. You touch the phone, you check Facebook. Touch the phone, you check Instagram. It's a constant thing. And it's not anything nefarious either. It's not like there's an old boyfriend out there. It's just, I want to see what other people are doing. I'm like, who cares?
Welcome to How To. I'm Amanda Ripley. Today, we're going to kick things off with a quick pop quiz. First, are you listening to me right now through your smartphone? Cool. Makes sense. And tell the truth, were you just scrolling through Twitter or Instagram? Do you find it hard to go even 10 minutes without checking your email or a news feed? What about when you see a beautiful sunset? Do you ever struggle to just be present without taking a picture to tell everyone about it on social media? Okay, so if you answered yes to any of those questions, well, you are definitely not alone, and you are in the right place. Which is why we were so grateful to get this voicemail from a listener in North Carolina.
I'm having a really hard time with my wife being addicted to Facebook, constantly wanting to measure up to Facebook, and I can't get her to break that habit. And I don't know what else to do, and that's why I'm calling.
This listener asked us to go by the name James, and he'll call his wife Angela.
I'm almost 40. I have a wife, Angela, and two kids. We met over Christmas, quote unquote, online five years ago.
Okay. So the internet has been a blessing and a curse like it has for most of us, it sounds like.
Yep. I gave a toast at my buddy's wedding and I said, you know, I'm glad to see you guys met the old fashioned way, same way we did over the internet.
Right.
So it's been one of those ongoing things. I don't know that addiction's the right word for it, but it is an addiction in the clinical sense that she just is so into social media, you know, Facebook, Instagram, you name it, she's on it.
Equally worrisome for James is how Angela constantly compares herself to other people online.
I had compared it to keeping up with the Joneses, you know, just on a ridiculous level. And I think a lot of it sort of affects how she feels about our life. And, you know, when you're on Facebook and you have 1,500 friends or whatever, pretty much somebody's on vacation 100% of the time. And, you know, it's like you're seeing their best day and you can't compare yourself to someone's best day all the time.
So you feel like there's a constant sense of not quite measuring up.
Not measuring up, or even just, bald-faced jealousy.
Uh-huh. Just straight up.
straight up. Can you believe they got that car?
All right. We're starting to get a sense of what you're struggling with. I wonder if we could go back in time for just a second. Can you, you know, describe to me what Angela was like when you met her, and was she as connected to her phone then?
We talk about, you know, oh, remember when we were dating and it was so different? We were just locked into each other. Very present, very focused on each other, you know, just enjoying each other's company. I mean, I dated girls that took pictures of their food every meal that they ate. Mm-hmm. And it was like, are you kidding me? And You know, it's one of those things where you're like, I don't think this is going to work.
Yeah.
But Angela wasn't like that, you know, when we were first dating.
It sounds like maybe that, you know, you're dealing with a loss as well, like with this constant pull towards the phone. Does it ever feel like, why am I not enough?
Yeah. Why can't you put the phone down and have a full conversation with me?
Yeah. Like, why isn't this full life we have enough?
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. And I've said that. Like, why can't you just be here with us?
How did she respond when you said that?
She goes, I am here. I just had to check my phone and I'm back talking to y'all. Like, what are you talking about, type of thing?
Yeah.
Or
she doesn't see it the way you do.
Mm-mm.
Question for you. Does she know that we're having this conversation?
No, no. It's a very touchy issue.
Yeah.
And as much as it's about social media and how to sort of wean away from it or not make it a part of daily life, it's also about talking to my wife.
On today's show, how to stop keeping up with the Joneses online and spend more time with the people you love in real life. To guide us through this brave new world, we've got one of the foremost experts on how to live a balanced digital life. Don't get distracted. We'll be right back.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman, a behavioral scientist and professor at the Wharton School and the author of the best-selling book, How to Change. You may have heard expressions like, time to get up and going, today's bad decisions aren't going to make themselves, or bad decisions make good stories. But really, no one wants to suffer the consequences of making a bad choice. Join me as I share true stories from sports heroes, Nobel laureates, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll discuss the latest research in behavioral science and dive into themes like whether we can learn to make smarter decisions and how powerful it can be to get a do-over. And we'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better choices in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
Ah, those were the days. Horse and buggies, dial-up internet. Are you old enough to remember that sound? I certainly am, and so is our expert. 25 years ago, Dr. David Greenfield was a practicing psychologist and marriage counselor who had just bought his first computer.
What are we talking about? Like a Macintosh 2E? Something like
that? I don't even know. We're talking dial-up.
Okay.
Like it was like, so we're talking really, really slow internet. So,
and yet you could already feel that it was seductive?
Yes, because – and there was nothing on the internet then. The only thing that – even porn was still just getting started back then. So it was – but it was, still was captivating. And one of the things my early research found was that all of us distort time when we're online, when we're on screens. There's something about that immersive experience of being in front of a screen that allows you to distort the passage of time.
Dr. Greenfield founded the Center for Internet and Technology Addiction and was one of the first to learn of the dangers of spending too much time online.
You've been thinking about this and worrying about this since the beginning of the internet. I saw the old People magazine profile.
Yeah.
And it was sort of charming reading it, you know, because it was like, wow, people use their phones 2 hours a day. What?
Yeah, that's right. It shows me kind of with a net over my head and saying, this is what an internet addict looks like. But really today in 2021, the internet addict is really all of us.
Right. It's become totally normalized, right? So no wonder James's wife doesn't feel like she has an addiction. She's just a normal person.
Right. She is one of hundreds of millions of people that are doing what she's doing. Yeah. It's not terribly unusual. And when she has that positive feeling, she's getting a small hit of dopamine. It's reinforcing. And because it's variable and, again, not consistent, it's going to compel her to keep doing it. This is why people on dating apps will swipe 4 billion times and why apps like TikTok are incredibly addictive, because it's unpredictable what you're going to see next.
Oh, wow. That's,
in other words, she may be just doing this sort of on autopilot without realizing it, which is what most of us do, by the way.
How many times have you been on autopilot, picking up your phone to just check one specific thing, and next thing you know, 20 minutes has vanished from your life? Dr. Greenfield knows about the pitfalls better than anyone, and this still happens to him.
I had to delete TikTok 2 or 3 times from my phone before I kind of got rid of it, because it was that addictive to me.
Huh.
I couldn't stop looking at it. I would open it and an hour would go by. And if you spend just 3 hours a day on your screens, doesn't matter what you're looking at, and you start as a child, you know, 5 to 10 years old, and you live into your 80s and you sleep 8 hours a night, you will spend 10 years of your waking life on that screen. That's 3 hours a day. At 6 hours a day, that's 20 years of your waking life.
Whoa, no wonder so many of us are bummed out when we see our weekly screen time report, if we can even bear to look at it. Being confronted with just how much time you spend on your phone is kind of mind-blowing. But then again, if we're all doing it, is it really a problem?
I keep on wanting to say it's not an addiction, it's not an addiction, but it really is when you think about, you know, it's a compulsion that is very difficult to break and sort of takes her out of our day-to-day, you know, even our fun things become photo opportunities or whatever, you know, a great Facebook or Instagram post.
Well, the issue is, can you record and post your life and still live it simultaneously? And the answer is probably not, you know, because when you live your life from the perspective of what will look good in a selfie or an Instagram feed or a Facebook post, it changes your experience of that experience itself. And actually, you take yourself out of the experience.
You're the performer and the observer at the same time.
Correct. That's exactly right. You've said it perfectly. You're the performer and the observer, but you can't really be present in anything unless you're consciously there. And you can't consciously be somewhere when you're thinking about how it's going to look or how it's going to be received. It's sort of like the difference between going on a vacation and worrying about photographing everything versus going on the vacation and experiencing the vacation. The more you look through a lens, the less likely you'll be present.
So that sounds like a validation, James, for what you're feeling.
Yep, absolutely. We went to the beach for my daughter's birthday, and you know, it was just the four of us, you know, my wife, my two daughters, and myself, and my mother-in-law, and we were opening presents. And for a kid to open presents, my wife had her stop, wait, hold on. We're setting them up. There was a backdrop, and it was really to make a photo op out of opening presents. And, you know, I just, in some ways, I didn't think it was fair to our daughter, but also thought it was just absolutely ridiculous. She packed to bring to the beach decorations for pictures.
So there's something that we talk about in social media addiction called social validation looping, which is the idea that our approval and our recognition by the people that look at our posts and comment on them or like them or, you know, respond to them validates us. And then what that does is it gives us a small dopamine hit, and that encourages us to do more of it. And it creates a loop that's really endless. And that's the problem with social media, is that the more you post, the more you look at to see how your posts are reacted to, and then the more you post. And you have to remember that that is the game of social media. The game of social media is to keep your eyes on screen, and you're paying with the one thing you can't get more of, and that has a limit, which is your time.
Yeah.
That's purposely designed. That is designed by social media to keep you on, or keep your wife on in this case.
Right. And it's a pull. It's like a...
Because it's a pull, because neurologically she's getting a hit of a primitive reward chemical that is linked to our evolutionary biology. This is part of the addiction reward system that everybody has. And when you get intermittent reinforcement via responses to your social media posts, you are, in a sense, getting a hit of a digital drug.
Huh. I mean, it certainly feels, I will say, speaking for myself, it does feel like a bit of an addiction. Like, I'll notice, you know, I'm a writer, I work in isolation a lot of the times, and I find myself, you know, just without even thinking, going to my email or going to Twitter. And it's like, I'm looking for connection. I'm looking for, maybe it's dopamine. I don't know.
Don't forget, dopamine is part of the limbic system of the brain, the animal part of the brain that's millions of years old. It's not the cognitive cortical part of the brain that, you know, is thinking. So yes, you'll pick up your phone. People will pick up their phone 50 to 300 times a day to check it. Now, I can assure you they don't need to do that. And because it's variable reinforcement, essentially the internet becomes the world's largest slot machine.
Yeah.
Here's our first insight. This is not our fault. It's not Angela's fault. We are outgunned right now, as we keep being reminded by every headline and congressional hearing. Thousands of very smart people at some of the richest companies in the world are spending all day, every day, designing ways to capture and recapture our attention, to distract us from leaving, to give us little injections of dopamine. Dr. Greenfield noticed the magnetism of these machines way back when they were on our desktops. Now we've got supercomputers in our pocket at our bedside all the time. So how can James possibly compete with that?
Not unlike any problem in a relationship. Obviously, there has to be communication about it. I think no judgment, no, you know, have some empathy that this is something that's important to her. And the thing is, you really want to talk about how it affects you when she does it, not that what she's doing is wrong. Because the minute you tell that somebody's doing something wrong, they're going to become defensive and they're going to feel like you're critiquing them or criticizing them. And then you really, the game is over. You can't really hope to achieve any change at that point. So you have to find a way to communicate how it's impacting you, and that you miss her, and that you miss her being present, but not in a critical sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I never thought of it with the, you know, the lack of judgment, the, you know, the empathy and the like. I understand that it's something, not that you just enjoy, but it's become part of your life. And so, and sort of saying, hey, you know, I get it.
James, how, if you were to describe to your wife how it affects you, like Dr. Greenfield suggested, what might that sound like? What might you say?
It takes me out of a joyful moment. It takes me out of enjoying just our presence together, and you know, it takes our eyes off of each other's eyes.
I think that's very well said.
And you know, you throw our two wonderful girls into the mix, and it becomes truly we're missing something, because these moments, while they're being captured, it's taking us out of those moments, and we're not going to get them again. We're not going to have them again.
I think that's the one. If you can say that with a sort of warm and loving approach, maybe she can hear you. You know, she can hear the fact that it's done out of love and out of wanting to have her present with you and the children together, and to have you enjoy your experiences together.
Absolutely.
Right. It's not done out of judgment or condescension. Yep. It's more like, I miss you. Yeah. I love how you said that. It takes your eyes away from my eyes.
Yeah, I like that, actually.
So we've helped James understand his wife's behavior with a little more compassion, which is the first step. And the next step is for him to try to tell her how her behavior is affecting him, without judgment. Hopefully he can find a way to make that hearable. But even if he does, then what? Let's say Angela realizes she may have a problem with excessive phone use. How does she start to solve it? How do any of us? Don't go anywhere.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
We're back with our listener, James, and our expert, David Greenfield. Remember how this all started? Here's a young Mark Zuckerberg, as portrayed by Jesse Eisenberg in the movie The Social Network.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that? Friends, pictures, profiles, whatever you can visit, browse around. Maybe it's someone you just met at a party. But I'm not talking about a dating site. I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
I think back on The Social Network, the movie about the founder of Facebook. He almost started it as a nasty thing, comparing girls and all this type of stuff.
Yes, yeah.
And it's become normalized, but at the same time, isn't that sort of still the process? Isn't that sort of, hey, I'm putting this out there. What do you guys think?
I don't know if this was in that movie or not. I can't recall. It might have been. You know, you remember they talked about the development of the like button, that was actually not originally part of Facebook. Right. And it was an employee who came up with the idea that if you put a like button on the site so people could rank and rate and acknowledge posts, that increased their utilization substantially. Because that then you have that social validation part, and that becomes a reinforcing loop.
Is that how your wife grew up? Like, did she have to look a certain way and have everything in the house look perfect? And was there pressure on her?
She was voted best dressed of her high school class.
Okay.
She, you know, in a very small rural town, she was sort of one of those it girls, and she had the newest car and the latest clothes and all that stuff. And so
So she was like a popular girl. She was one of the cool girls.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that's a good feeling. That's a big part of your identity, right? Like to be like the it girl. And then also everyone's watching. It's like being in the royal family, sort of. Like, you can't just, you know, you can't just go on vacation because you have to make sure you have the right bathing suit and the right hat and the right big sunglasses and everything looks right. Because, you know, the paparazzi's
there. Right.
Does she care if you like her posts online? You know what I mean? If you, by like, I mean, click the like button.
Right. She said to me, "You didn't like my post." I said, "No, I told you I liked it." And she's like, "But you didn't click like under my post."
She's in the metaverse and you're here in the universe.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's sometimes more pernicious for girls and women because, I mean, I'm thinking about the women's magazines I used to read when I was a teenager, you know, 17 and Cosmo. And then I read this study about how after women read those magazines, they always felt worse about themselves.
Yeah. Well, that is what the data is showing specifically around teens and Instagram. And there's been some significant research on the negative impact of these because people are comparing themselves to the images that they see, just like you did in those magazines.
Right. And the difference is the magazine ends at some point. Like there are only so many pages.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So one of the things about the internet that makes it completely different than any form of media or information ever before is that there are no boundaries. There's no beginning. There's no middle. There's no end. So when are you done?
Do you recommend setting up boundaries at home?
Absolutely.
Like, how do you and your wife manage this? Do you have like sort of a no phone policy at dinner? Or?
Yeah, you have to. If you do not develop a mindful plan for how to manage screen tech today, you will become inundated by it and it will absorb your life. If you don't manage your screens, they will absolutely manage you. Otherwise, they will control your life.
Well, it reminds me of, for various reasons that we don't have to go into, I was recently watching a show with Ice-T, the rapper, you may remember. And he was saying how his wife is like a huge influencer online. And they have a rule where they get home, they put away their phones. Because otherwise, it becomes like there's a third person in the marriage. You know, like there's... Because both of them have big, you know, social media presences. So they literally put them in a drawer at like 9 p.m. and that's it. I mean, I wonder, James, if there's an opportunity now that your daughter has a phone, your 12-year-old, you know, to sort of create a family media plan and come up with some joint agreed upon rules.
Yeah, the first thing that came to mind, some of the best conversations we've ever had are in the car. And if we can... And that sort of influences our oldest daughter as well to sort of be like, hey, they want to spend some time with me, but it's got to be discussed ahead of time. And it's got to be a plan and intentional. It can't just be a, all right, we're in the car. Everybody put your phones up. I've had it, you know.
Right, right.
You can make that sort of a conscious plan, but if you don't set it and, you know, and then follow it, it won't happen. Like you have to say, oh, you know, okay, well, how about if we spend 50% of our time in the car together, you know, have it as no phone time.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another thing to try. Since the internet knows no boundaries, you have to create them. Here are some of the ones I've found work well for me. Not all the time, but most of the time. And I actually wrote these down, by the way, because I knew I would conveniently forget them. No phones at the dinner table. Obviously, that's just basic manners at this point. Turn off all notifications, all of them. And then spend $10 on an old school alarm clock so you don't have to keep your phone on your nightstand. For me, my biggest weakness these days is checking email when I really should be writing. So I use a browser extension that shuts down access to specific sites for an hour or two at a time. Essentially, it just removes the temptation for me.
I mean, the truth is, the research is pretty clear. People that leave social media do not miss it. And in fact, ultimately, people who leave social media report higher life satisfactions. They actually report a more positive experience. And in fact, I used to use social media. I mean, I, I have all of those sites. I will occasionally look at them, but for the most part, I don't post on them. And the reason why I don't post is because I know that then I'm going to want to see if anyone's looking at my posts, and then I'm going to want to post more. The kind of social connection you get on social media isn't very nutritious. It doesn't have that potency. And in fact, the word social media is really kind of an oxymoron. It's not really social. It's kind of antisocial in a way. It doesn't really build connections in the way that people purport. I mean, I'm not saying you can't have positive experiences on social media and it can't provide opportunities to interact in positive ways, but I don't think it really creates the kind of social connection that is nutritious as real-time connection.
This is an important insight. Don't be hard on yourself for wanting social connection. That is really healthy. The problem is you won't get it most of the time from social media.
We want to leave James with a little hope here. Have you ever seen a patient who was really struggling with a tendency to just be online all the time and then got better?
Of course. People get better all the time. The capacity for people to change is inherent. And the capacity for people to develop new patterns and new habits of behavior are wired into our nervous system. Our brains are neuroplastic. Sometimes that requires a little help. Sometimes you have to do it with some motivation from an outside source. But absolutely, there's hope. People change all the time. And again, how you communicate is critical. It has to be done in a very loving, thoughtful way. If you criticize the person who you're trying to help change, that defensiveness will block any change.
Do you think it's possible, James, that she also misses those weekends that you two used to have together when you were long distance and dating, when you were really, really just totally looking into each other's eyes? Do you think she misses that too?
Absolutely. We've got to get back to where we once were. The more we do face-to-face and the more we do, you know, our interaction without the glow of a phone, it's a lot better.
Thank you to James for sharing his story with us. We'll be thinking of you and Angela and hoping for the best. And to Dr. David Greenfield for all his useful advice. We'll link to his website in the show notes. If you found this episode useful, you definitely want to check out our previous episode entitled How to Put Down Your Phone, which is full of other tips for living a balanced digital life. Do you have a problem that needs solving? Send us a note at howto@slate.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-495-4001. We'd love to have you on the show. And if you like what you heard today, please give us a rating and a review and tell a friend. That helps us help more people. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rosemary Belson produces the show. Our theme music is by Hannes Brown, remixed by Merritt Jacob, our technical director. Special thanks to Amber Smith and Kevin Bendis. Charles Duhigg created the show. I'm Amanda Ripley. Thank you for listening and have a safe and happy new year. In other words, we could all use a little less Facebook and a lot more FaceTime. I was trying to think of some other, a little less Instagram and a little more Instapot. No. A little less Fortnite and a little more date night. A little less Snapchat and a little more chit chat.